Today is Wednesday, February 21st. This is the women's chumashir. We're in Bereishis, Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay, Rabotai. We are up to Bereishit, Perek Tetvav, Pasuk Yud Zayin. We had seen thus far that HaKadosh Baruch Hu invites Avram to engage in the establishment of a covenant. He tells Avram that your children will be sent to a land that doesn't belong to them. They will be enslaved for 400 years. The nation that enslaves them, I will judge. They will leave with enormous wealth, and you will return. You'll pass away without having to suffer anything that I just described. It will be implemented with your children, not you. And the fourth generation hence, Dor Revi'i Yashuvu Heina, on account of the fact, Ki Lo Shalem Avon Ho'em Ori, I have no cause as yet to banish the current resident from the land, and therefore I have to delay my promise to give you Eretz Kina'an. So we're going to wrap up this unit today, and the Torah tells us in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Vayehi Hashemesh Ba'ah, Va'alata haya, v'hine tanur ashan v'lapid eish, asher avar bein hagzarim ha'ele. The sun indeed sat, and it was very, very dark. There was a furnace which contained a flame, an enormous flame, which produced an incredible amount of smoke, which actually passed in between the two sets of animals that had been cut off and symbolized the covenant itself. Bayomahu karat Hashem et Avram Brit Lemor, Lizaracha Natati Taaretz Hazot, Minahar Mitzrayim Anahar Gadol Nahar Parat. Fine. So, Rashi begins here by teaching us a very important diktuk lesson. And it's one of the few that you don't have to be Menachem, Rashi's diktuk teacher, to figure this one out. And it's one that drives people who listen to Kriyat HaTorah and want it to be read well, and they go bananas when somebody emphasizes the wrong syllable for that particular note. And the word ba'a appears several times in Sefer Bereshit. Sometimes it means in the present tense, is coming. Sometimes it means in the past tense, already came. And Rashi tells us very simply, if the emphasis is on the bet, ba'a, it means had already lapsed. Ba'a means is taking place in the present. So if you read it inappropriately, that is a good time for the whoever the correctors are, everybody knows exactly who they are, the correct is to alert the reader, you have to read this again. Because the only time you must read it again is if you change the meaning of the word with your misinterpretation. So this particular word, ba'a, appears in Parshat Vayetze with Rachel. Rachel ba'a and Rachel ba'a. So if you don't get them right in the same parsha, once it's ba'a, once... So Rashi will tell us what I just told you. So take a look at Pasuk Yud Zayin for a second. In the word ba'a, the third or fourth Rashi, but then we'll see what he says before that. Ta'amo lima'ala. So Rashi gives you another cue as to how to know whether or not to emphasize the first syllable or the second syllable? Which one should you emphasize? If the trup, the note, is one that is placed on top, then you know that the emphasis is on the first syllable. So if you look on top of the bet in the Chumash, there are two dots. That is a katon. The unit is called mapach, pashta, zakef, katon. So mapach is vayihi, hashemesh, pashta, ba'a. Whenever it's ba'a, the note will always be underneath and under the aleph. Under the aleph. You normally sound, 98% of the time, you emphasize the letter upon which the note is written, under which the note is. That normally gives you however, it's not always true, unfortunately. By klisha kitana, klisha gedola, there are different rules, but I'm not going to go through them now. But normally you can know that wherever the trup is, whether you can sing it or not, wherever that note is, that tells you how to emphasize. Here it's on the top, says Rashi. It's always going to be a top note whenever it is in the past. Ba-ba-a. Rashi says that. Ta'amo l'mala. Lekach hu mivu'ar sheba-kvar. The sun had already set. V'im haya ta'amo l'mata be'alef. If the note had been placed underneath the word, under the word, letter Aleph, Haya Mivu'ar Kishehi Shoka'as, as the sun is setting. If it had said, Vayhi Hashemesh Ba'a, then we would translate it as the sun was setting. The E.F. Shar Lomar came. Here we cannot read it as the sun is setting. Shaharei kvar ksiv vayehi hashemesh lavo. It already says in pasuk yud zayin. Yud bet. It says already in pasuk yud bet vayehi hashemesh lavo. As the sun was setting. Well, if in pasuk yud bet the sun was setting, in pasuk yud zayin, it must mean that what? The sun had already set. So Rashi is telling us that here there is no possible alternative. You have to read it with the emphasis on the word, on the letter bet, ba'a, and it means the sun already set. Fine, so remember that for, and he gives us several other words with this particular formula exists. Nimtza shekvar shaka v'zeh chiluk b'chol teva lashon nekeva sheyisoda shtei otiyot. Any lashon nekeva, any feminine word, which its root, its shoresh, is of two letters, like ba, kam, shav, so it will be kama or kama. Depending vehini kama alumati, where Yosef describes his vision, the bundles of grain stood up. So they had already stood up. So it's vehine kama alumati. If it would be describing the actual rise, it would say there would be some note on the bottom which would say kama alumati. Fine, and so Rashi gives us that grammar rule. You can try to remember it. Fine, very nice. Very nice. Because usually my Rebbe, who had no less of a clue about diktuk than I do, whenever he saw a diktuk, he skipped it. Ah, we're not learning this Rashi. Not learning this much. Because where he came from in Mir, they didn't teach any grammar. Yeah. Good. Now, Ibn Ezra chooses to disagree with Rashi. Take a look at Ibn Ezra. Did I bracket it for you on the handout? Let me see. Yeah, on page number 2, on the right, on the left-hand side of page number 2 is Ibn Ezra. Vayhi HaShemesh Ba'a, what does Ibn Ezra say? Bitchila Odena Loba'a. It had not yet set. And how does he prove that? How does he prove that? Because it says in Pasuk Yudbet, Vayhi HaShemesh Lavo, the sun is about to set. So how is Ibn Ezra interpreting this Pasuk? Not as a second event, but rather what? As what? As that there he's telling us what will happen. And what is happening in this Pasuk? It's describing, it's happening right now. And it's very difficult because Ibn Ezra is the Parshanan, Klasi, our greatest Parshanan, who 90% of the time refers to the grammatical use of the word to inform him about the pshat of the word. Here, he can't disagree with Rashi that the word ba'a means what? In the past tense. He can't disagree because there are so many other proof texts in the Chumash as Rashi quoted some of them. So in this particular case, Ibn Ezra is acting very much out of character. But what he's doing is telling us that there, the Torah said as a preview, I'm telling Avram, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Avram what's going to happen. The sun will set, there will be darkness, you will now fall asleep as a result of that darkness, and then I'll tell you something. Now the Torah is recapping and saying, this is exactly what happened. The sun began to set, darkness appeared, alata, and there are fires and so on and so forth, and Avram is now told, Bayomahu karat Hashem brit in Avram lemor, as it says in the next pasuk. So Ibn Ezra might be right in terms of what this pasuk is telling us, but I can't explain how he decides to override the obvious grammatical, unless he would say that the word should be read not the Hashemesh Ba'a, but Hashemesh Ba'a. So maybe in his Masorah, that's the way his Rebbe taught him, that there was a note indicating that it's Ba'a. I don't know. I can't tell you that. But Ibn Ezra certainly believes that this is unfolding as we speak right here. Now, many of you asked the question, correctly so, why is it that it is necessary for Avram to fall into this deep sleep, and yet we've seen several interactions between God and Avram, and no place does it ever say that what? That he's falling asleep. So does anybody remember what we said at the time? And today I'm going to tell you something else, because one of our Parshanim here comment on it. Anybody remember what we said? So we said that, okay, the Torah is Ani b'makom echad v'ashir b'makom acher. Not all details appear in every single event. The Torah can split up its information. When it's talking about someone or to someone, you can get a clue here and a clue there, and it's our task to put all the clues together. So the thesis is that every single time that Avram, and in parentheses, every other Navi, engaged in speaking to God, this is exactly what happened. They fell into a deep trance, and this pasuk is what we call the binyan av, the proto-stake. It teaches us this happened every single time. Why does the Torah choose to tell us this detail here and not elsewhere? I can't tell you that. But it's a very famous phrase. Ani b'makom echad, poor, in other words, not much information. Ashir b'makom acher, rich in other areas, there are more details, but it's all one and the same. However, if you were to take a look for a second at with an ayin, yes. Ani, yes.
Ani is ani, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Let's just see who says it. Yes?
When Moshe was burning bush, he wasn't asleep.
No, Moshe is the only one who speaks to God, panim el panim, ka'asher yidaber ish imre'ehu. Moshe is the only one. No one else. Let's see. I know I bracketed it someplace. No, that's not there. If I don't see it inside, I'll tell you it's the outside. Okay, I forget who I saw it, but he explains the following, that it is no coincidence that the Torah describes this here, because the governing theory is the content dictates the mode of transmission. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling you something of a positive nature, there is no description about falling asleep. If he's going to be telling you something of a negative feature, at least concerning Klal Yisrael, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want to do it while you're so alert, and he will implement this only in a situation where you are in a deep sleep and so on, in a more clouded fashion. So up until now, every single dialogue between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avram has only had been positive. He told him to leave Moladetcha, Artzecha, Moladetcha. He told him, Lezaracha Atena to Aretz Hazot. He, you know, whatever it was he told him was, Al Tira, you know, Scharcha HaBeimaod. Every one of the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a positive benefit for Avram. But here, when he's being told, Kigeri Zaracha Be'eretz Lolahem, and so on and so forth, Va'avodum, therefore this now has to be communicated to him, specifically in Arafel, in a state of darkness. I forgot who said it, and therefore he does not believe that the rule of thumb is accurate. It always depends, and he believes, whoever this is, always believes that this is true for every single Navi. So take Yirmiyahu, who by and large is conveying a sense of Churban to Am Yisrael, occasionally something positive, but usually Churban. He will always be in a trance. And Yechezkel, who will tell us about what's going to happen in the third Beit HaMikdash, he's wide awake when this takes place. That's his theory, whoever it is. The Radak. Okay. Did I bracket it for you? I thought I did. Okay. Where is the Radak?
Page 1.
Page 1. Good. Excellent. Yeah. Yes. Which Dibur HaMaskel is that? Tardema Nafla. You're right. That's correct. Mikoach HaNivu'ah Ba'a HaTardema. Based on what? On this particular prophecy, that's why the shluch, the deep sleep, came about. Because the prophecy is not going to be a terribly positive one. It'll include number one, Mitzrayim, And as we will soon see, reiterate something that we said, everyone said before, it's going to be the siman for four other galuyot that Am Yisrael will experience. Therefore, the tardema. And that's what he says. Ula Avram betchil, 8 lines from the bottom of that unit. Ula Avram betchila ha-teravua, lo haya lo kol zeh. Ki betchila amar lo bisura tova. He only informed him of good news. Aval ata, kishiba lo mar lo tzarat hagalut, shiyeh lebanav, hi pil alav tardema, ve'ema v'chashecha gidola, remez lo al hatzarot, shiyu kashot. It's just a way of informing Avram that these are going to be terribly difficult times for Avram. Yeah, that's point number one.
Was there a meal consumed?
What?
Was there a meal consumed at any point during this break?
A what?
Did he eat any of this?
No. It doesn't say any place that any of the meat was consumed. Doesn't say it.
It's not a carbohydrate.
No. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. Doesn't mean that this is the same day, even.
Right. It's hard to figure out the time.
That is correct. Someone else mentions that pasuk is in effect happening after this pasuk, because when the Torah says Usfar go habet na hachutza Usfar hakochavim, if the sun hadn't set yet, how are you counting the stars? And this leads to a major debate between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. The Bavli is of the opinion that whenever we apply the rule Ein Mukdam Umu'uchar BaTorah, that rule cannot take place within a given unit. It can't. The whole unit has to be in chronological order. If there are two different units being discussed, as happens so frequently, then you have a right to apply that unit A took place after unit B. Right now we're in the midst of 5 parshiyot that describe the construction of the Mishkan. Truma last week, Tetzaveh this week, then Vayakha and Pekudei repeat. In between is Ki Tisa. So everybody except the Ramban believes that Kitisa preceded Truman Tetzava. The Chet HaEgel is that which caused Am Yisrael to be given a Mishkan. Because initially God believed that we would be able to survive without tangible worship to Him. Just faith and absolute belief. But when they worshipped the Egel, they demonstrated that they were not at that particular level yet. They were on a lower level of faith in God, and they needed something tangible. So God, as a concession, says, okay, make the Mishkan and just do it what I tell you to do. So there you have 2 full parshiyot, Truma and Tetzaveh, that follow Kitisa. So that is where the Bavli says that's okay. But within a given unit, or even certainly not within same pasuk, you can't do that, says the Ba'al. But the Yerushalmi disagrees. Be'inyan echad, says the Yerushalmi, you are allowed to apply, and the Yerushalmi does from time to time, apply the principle of Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar BaTorah, even if it's in the same unit. So here, this would support the Yerushalmi if you believe that all of these visions took place on the same day. That when did God tell Avram to go out of his tent? On that same day after the sun set, then the stars come out and he told him, Habet na hachutza. Others say, no, that was day number one. This is day number two. It's got nothing to do with one another. Yeah, it talks about nighttime, but that nighttime was not the night following the sunset, which we talk about right here.
Yes. When you classify the unit, is it just a parsha or is it eretz?
No, an episode. No, Harakim have nothing to do with us because they're not ours.
Right.
A parsha would be whenever there is a psucha or a stuma, where there is a break in the written Torah. Either there is, you know, something is written and then the rest of the line is left open. That's called a psucha. Or a stuma, there is a gap of 9 letters between topic A and topic B, but the second topic continues on the same line. So that's considered less of a break. But if there is a topic that comes to an end, nothing left on that line, next up, everybody believes that that's the second topic. But prakim have nothing to do with us. However, those who believe that whatever it is, they say that the fact that the sun is setting is part of the symbolism. That what's going to happen when the sun is bright, that's the symbol that things are going well for Am Yisrael. And then what happens? The sun sets and it indicates that it's not going to happen in 1 second. It's not going to happen in 1 second. And typically, Galuyot didn't happen from today till tomorrow. It took a while, takes a while. HaKadosh Baruch Hu usually gives a lot of warnings to the Nevi'im to warn them and warn them and warn them. And then, as the sun sets, that's indicating to us that it's getting closer and closer and God's patience is wearing thin. So therefore, it's not just a fact that the sun happened to be setting and it's nighttime, I'm going to sleep, but that in itself is part of the vision indicating the transition between good things happening and terrible things about to come. That's point number two. Point number three is a very important point that I want to show you. Take a look at page number three. Is a very important Ramban. There are several images in this particular pasuk. There is the sun setting. There is the darkness approach alata. There was a darkness. And then three is tanur ashan, the smoke billowing from the furnace. The lapid eish and a flam fire, I can't translate that into English, a flam fire, in the oven itself. In the oven itself. So, most interpret these symbols as all referring to tragic times within Am Yisrael. The Ramban and the Radak, who follows the Ramban, seem to indicate that they might be referring to something else. So take a look at on the Ramban. Well, does I have to read the whole thing? Yes, page three. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So the Ramban says, "Hinei HaKadosh Baruch Hu hiftiach et Avraham b'matnat ha'aretz pi'amim rabim." We've noticed that God has given to Avraham, promised him the land several times. V'kulam Litzorech inyan. Every single time that God has said, "I'm going to give you the land," it's to add something above and beyond that He had said previously, and He's going to go through that. Bivo'o ba'aretz, when He came into the land, mitchila amarlo lizaracha etein et ha'aretz hazot. So in Perek Yudbet pasuk Zayin, that's the first time that God said it. He says, "I'm going to give you this land." V'lo bier matanato. There were no explanations when this is going to happen, what might be the boundaries. Ki ein bimashma, the only thing that is communicated in that phrase, rak bameh shahalach ba'aretz, ad makom shechem, ad elon moreh. Until Shechem, and until the property called Elon Moreh. Why does he mention these things? Why does he mention those two areas? Because the text itself mentioned them, that Avram was there. That's Pasuk Vav. So when God says, Ulezarachah etein aretz hazot, what does the word Eretz hazot mean? Wherever you have trespassed thus far. That's a small sliver of land. The Achar came, listen to this, Kishirabu Zichuyotav Ba'aretz Hosiflo. When Avram's merits suddenly increased, God responded and what? Increased the land. What did he say? Sona Einecha Ure Tzafona Vanegba Vakedma Viyama Ki Yitain Lo Kolha Rotsotohain Bichlalan. He will now give him not only those lands Shechem and Elon Moreh on which he had trespassed thus far, but he will now expand it wherever you, just whenever your eyes can see. Now he knows that what? Your eyes can't see very far. How far can a person see? In fact, the Radak will say, it's only X number of miles that a human being can possibly see. V'ein tam asher ata ro'eh be'einecha. It doesn't really mean what you can physically see with your eyes. Ki re'ot ha'adam einenu lemerchak. The actual vision of man with his or her physical eyes is not a terribly great distance. Rak sheyitein lo lechol mar'ei einav haruchot. What does that mean?
Directions.
What? The directions, correct. O sheher'eyu kol eretz Yisrael, or he showed him all of Eretz Yisrael. Does anybody remember a midrash that is quoted frequently by people to support this particular idea? That, you know what, it's not just direction, but what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do to the land?
He
folded up Eretz Yisrael, says the midrash, and put it under Avram so that whatever he saw was actually all of Eretz Yisrael. Or when God tells him, Kum hithalech ba'aretz le'orka ulerachba, which is at the end of that chapter, it means Avram couldn't walk all over all of Eretz Yisrael now. It's impossible. What he did was he folded up the land and he made it like a little game board which he can walk around, and that was Kol Aretz Hazot. That's a Medrash trying to amplify and explain to us what's happening here. Oh, Kasher Haya B'Moshe Rabbeinu. Just as when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe when he's standing on the Har Nevo, you know what? I want you to look at Eretz Yisrael. Sona Einecha Orei. Because you're not going to go there. So he showed him all of Eretz Yisrael. The Hosif Lo Bibracha Hashnia Hazot Od Lezaracha Ad Olam. During this stage, when God repeats the land, it, number one, expands the geographic territory. It's not just Shechem and Elon Moreh. Plus, it's not just Lezaracha etein et aretz hazot, which could be for 15 years, could be for 500 years. But what does it mean? Lezaracha etein aretz hazot le'olam. That's the second thing. Ushiyarbe zar'o ka'afar ha'aretz. And another part of the land, another part of the promise early on was that your children are going to multiply like the granules of sand. Ubepam hashlishit bi'erlo Tchumei Haaretz. And now the third time, he's going to tell him what might be the boundaries of this Eretz Yisrael. Those are going to be the 10 nations that are mentioned in just a second. V'hizkir lo kol ha'amim asara umot. The land occupied currently by 10 nations. V'hosif lichrot lo brit alehen. And God now also, in addition to saying that he promised these three times, God makes a covenant. Why? Shelo yigrom hachet. I've told you this many times. The difference between a promise and a covenant is that a promise is conditional. I promise you this if you do this. A covenant binds both parties irregardless if the other one neglects to fulfill their responsibilities or not. So God enters into a covenant knowing that Am Yisrael will may not be so fine and dandy sometimes, and that they deserve to be stripped of their land, but it'll never happen because I made this covenant with you. Uka'asher tzivahu al hamila omar lo le'achuzat olam. Lamar to teach us, she'im yiglu mimena, if they will be what?
Exiled
from the land. Go back. Go to number. Where does it continue? Page 4. It's not there. It's there. It means that, what do you have there? That will go back in. Even if they transgress, they will come back. So the question, again, many of you asked this. Why is there so much repetition? Repetition, according to the Ramban, is each stage adds something else. A general promise, I'll give you Eretz Yisrael. Number two, it's not just the land which you are currently occupying. It's going to be much broader than that. Number three, it will include a permanent inheritance to your children. And then number four, even if they transgress, that will not terminate the covenant. That's point number one, which the Ramban contributes. Point number two, everybody believes that when we will read in the next pasuk about the 10 nations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, it was decided as of now they will only get 7, and three others, Edom, Ammon, and Moab, only Liyamot HaMashiach. Rashi says that virtually all of the Parshanim say that. That right now he mentions all 10 nations, but it's supposed to be split. The Ramban is the only one who disagrees. He doesn't say it here, but he says it in Parshat Shlach. Anybody remember what the topic in Parsha Shlach is? Who remembers? The Meraglim episode, correct. It's chapter 14, 13 and 14 in Bamidbar. So there the Ramban, in a lengthy essay, says there are 5 consequences of the Chet HaMeraglim. 5. Not just that they will not enter Eretz Yisrael immediately and wander in the desert for 40 years. One of the consequences, said the Ramban, was that initially the promise to receive all 10 lands, had they not been guilty of the Chet HaMeraglim, they would have inherited all 10 nations right here and now. So that means Ammon is Syria, parts of Lebanon and Syria. Moab is what? Is parts of Jordan, yes. And then as a result of the Chet HaMeraglim, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided, you know what, I'm only going to give you partial credit now. Later on, Liyamot HaMashiach, you get them. That's the second thing which the Ramban is different than everybody else. And then a third thing which he differs, I can't believe I didn't focus that there. Yeah, no, they did. Go to page 2. Go to page 2. In the Ramban on the top right of the page, V'hine tanur ashan v'lapidesh. Ra'a ki'ilu tanur ashan kulo. He saw an image of an oven being totally consumed. U'bitocho, and inside, lapid esh bo'era. And he finds a parallel to this. Where? Ki'inyan ashan gadol ve'et esh mitlakachat ve'ha'ashan hu he'anan ve'harafel ha'nizkar b'matan Torah. Ve'lapid esh b'tocho hu ha'esh ha'amur sham. According to the Ramban, this imagery that Avram is experiencing now is supposed to remind us not necessarily of the tragedies that Am Yisrael will experience later on, but it's supposed to be a foreshadowing of an event which we call Matan Torah. So in Matan Torah, we know that there was Arafel, the mountain itself, there was a cloud cover covering the mountain. And the Torah tells us, not a medrash, the Torah tells us that the udvarav shamata mitoch ha'esh, uksiv umarei kvod Hashem ke'esh ochelet, v'hine hashchina avra bein habitarim, v'hu habrit Asher haita ito me olam. So the Ramban says that there is one other component of this covenant. I just told you 2 seconds ago that a covenant is not conditional. Here the Ramban is hedging his bet. What do you think he's telling us by inserting Kabbalah, the description of Matan Torah at this particular time? Why do you think he's saying this? Because it will be to some extent conditional on your accepting of the Torah. Accepting of the Torah. But here I have to emphasize. Does anybody know what we call the experience of Har Sinai many other times in the Chumash and dozens of times in our Slichot of Rosh Hashanah, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, Yom Kippur? What is it called as opposed to Zichor Lanu Brit Avot? There's another phrase. Zichor Lanu, it's a pasuk at the end of Parshat Bechukot, towards the end of Bechukotai. Brit Rishonim. Brit Rishonim. Brit Rishonim is the Brit that was made at Har Sinai. So what the Ramban claims here is as follows. That if the covenant which I established with the Avot had, and now they come to Har Sinai, and Bnei Yisrael had done what all the other nations did, according to the Medrash, asked God, what is included in your Torah? So this one said, God said, Lo Tigzol. So the Yishma'elim said, we can't live without Lo Tigzol. With Lo Tigzol. And then what else? The Esav comes, the Edom coming. What does it say? Lo Tirzach. If it says Lo Tirzach, I can't accept. So the Jews said, the Jews didn't ask. What were they asked? Hey, what are you not allowed to eat on Pesach? Oh, you're not allowed to eat the gebracht. Oh, I can't accept the Torah for not allowed to eat gebracht. Bnei Yisrael didn't say that. Had they not said Na'aseh v'nishma, then Avram's covenant would have been null and void. That's what the Ramban means here. That the Eish and the Anan is symbolizing what will take place during Matan Torah. That's why he uses these symbols in conveying the Brit to Avraham. Because the imagery that we find it is exactly parallel to the imagery of Matan Torah. However, that experience is also called a Brit. Because it did not demand observance of the Torah, what did it demand? The acceptance of the Torah. Had they not accepted the Torah, then Avram's covenant, Brit Avot, would be null and void. But once they said the Aseh V'Nishma, then they engaged in the Brit Rishonim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made. V'Zacharti Lehem Brit Rishonim. Asher Otzeiti Otam Eretz Mitzrayim. Eleini Agoyim. Liyot Lohem Lelohim. Ani Hashem. That's the end of the Pasuk. That's called Brit Rishonim. And that's the Brit of Sinai. And even though Am Yisrael have violated that covenant too many times, nonetheless, since it is a covenant, that promise made by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Avot still stands with us because it was done by way of a covenant. However, here HaKadosh Baruch Hu introduces a clause into the covenant with the Avot that, yes, I'm willing to make you a covenant, but if they don't accept the Torah when the opportunity presents itself, then this deal is completely off. Completely off. Yes.
What's accepting and then not implementing? Now, a seven ishma, doesn't that imply to accept to fulfill it?
Yes.
Or
that's correct. No. No one says that when you accept it, that you don't. The intention is to observe, but it happens. You don't always observe. It's the same thing happens to be the halacha concerning conversion, which is learned out from Sinai. If a potential convert comes and expresses sincerely his or her intention to convert, even if they don't wind up observing, the geirut is still valid. Because at the time, they did, if we're convinced that they are sincere, not just pulling the wool over us. But it's hard to measure somebody's sincerity. But from our perspective, we are convinced of their sincerity, despite the fact that 2 weeks later they're doing something else already, it does not halachically invalidate the geirut, no matter what anybody says. It's black and white in Shulchan Aruch.
They'd be doing just what B'nai Israel did.
Correct.
2 weeks later they were.
That is correct. Very well, yes. Yeah. I'm not sure. The Ashan's the cloud cover which created the Arafel, the darkness. We don't have any indication that Mamad Har Sinai was at night. It was broad daylight. So what created the Arafel, the dark covering? It was the smoke of the cloud cover, the Ashan, the Hahar Ashen Kulo. That's what it says in Parshat Yisro. The mountain fully was enveloped with smoke. Nobody could see much. And so the Ramban introduces this and then he says at the end, and here is where you have to help me out, the last two lines, V'hu abrita shahaita ito le'olam. V'ze ta'am karat Hashem et Avram Brit. Ki HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'atzmo he'evir brit bein habitarim. What does it mean? What does it mean? That God walked through the split, through the pieces of meat that were lying there from the animals. God personally walked through. And he tells you, I'm not going to tell you what this means. V'hamaskil yavin. Somebody who's got a little brains and knows a little Kabbalah. This is a code name for Kabbalah. You know a little Kabbalah, you'll understand what I'm referring to. That the Shekhinah itself walked through. So I can't explain it. Whatever it means. It's a very powerful image. What?
Brought the fire through it?
It's a very ominous.
No, it's that Bichvoy Doi, himself walking through it. And that's why perhaps it's necessary to have all these trappings, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is walking through it, who could not see it? Avram can't see it. Ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. Nobody can look at me and survive. And that's what, again, something very unique to the Ramban, amongst all the Parshanim, interjecting this. Number one, Sinai, and number two, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, whatever that means, walks through the Brit Bein HaBitarim. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if this is a fair question, but
any question's fair.
How did the cutting of animals become a representing a brick? How did that? Is it just
my bet would be that this was in existence throughout the culture of that time. I don't know anything about, but that's my bet would be. That this was standard modus operandi for any culture at that particular time. So you have to ask the people who study Near Eastern studies, Far Eastern studies, you know, ancient civilizations. We have plenty of people in the shul who do that. Ask them. Now, take a look on the bottom of page 4. Orach Chaim pipes up and says something. Bayomahu Karat Omro Nasati Lashon Avar. So the Pasuk says, Bayomahu in Pasuk Yudchet, Bayom Karat Hashem Rilaymor, Lizaracha Natati et Haaret Hazot. What should it have said? Etain, as it says previously, Lizaracha Etain et Haaret Hazot. Why does it already say Natati? So he says something very interesting. Lefi ma shekidem lanu shehechzik ba Avraham. Based on the previous citations that we just referenced, that Avraham was told, Sana einecha urei, and kum hithalech ba'aretz la'arka olurachba, yutzdak lomar natati kvar. It is perfectly correct to say that what? I have already given. Ki habanim yizku midin yoresh. Anything that we own, when we pass away, the Olam HaEmes, our children automatically inherit. They require no kinyan whatsoever. All of one's assets are transmitted to one's children. So therefore, once Avram made a kinyan, and that's why Orach Chaim said over there, why did God tell him to walk around the property? Because there are three ways to legally acquire property. You can give money, kesef, shtar, you can write a document, or the third one is called chazakah. Chazakah is you demonstrate ownership over the property. There are many ways to demonstrate ownership. You can change the locks. If you change the locks, that means you're the owner. Another way is to walk around the entire property and say, this is mine now. I'm walking around to check the borders, check what's happening. So he believes that as soon as Avram was given the land, his children to some extent legally own it. Because they are going to be Yoresh. And this is symbolized to us by virtue of the fact that the Torah used the expression, not etain, but natati et haaretz hazot. That is what the Orach Chaim says. It's an important idea. Works for Yerush. Yeah. And then, finally, I'd like you to look at take a look at Radak at the bottom of page 3. Bayomahu karat Hashem et Avram Brit. Ba'oto hamareh, in that vision, karat imo Brit, latet lizaro et haaretz kula. he made a covenant to give him the entirety of the land. The Ramaz lo bazeh, and he hinted, she yirshu ota kula li yeshivat hagalut hazeh, that after this first galut, they will inherit the entire 10 nations. Ki amar lo she yitei lezaro eser umot shezachar. He promised them the 10 nations that we will read next week. Ubi Yerusha Rishona lo yarshu ela eretz shiv'a umot. And yet, with the first conquest of Yehoshua, they only took hold of 7 of the 10. Vikeni uknizi vikadmoni lo yarshu adayin. Milamed, says the Radak, shahamamar hazeh le'atid hu. So how does the Radak understand this covenant that Avram is making? Very different than almost everybody else. This is not the covenant that what? That after Yitzhak Mitzrayim, they are going to inherit the land. This is the covenant that what? Le'atid lavo.
So
when we
add, detract.
What?
It doesn't add, as we were saying before, that each discussion.
Correct. This detracts. It minimizes. Yeah. That initially we're only going to get 7/10 of the land and the fulfillment of the promise to inherit the Keni, Knezi, and Kadmoni. That's Moab, Ammon, and Edom. Will only take place le'atid lavo. La'atid lavo. It's a little difficult. It's a little difficult to say because it's difficult. It's difficult that in this stage here that Avram's being told, you know what, this is going to be done, the Melech HaMashiach, and so on and so forth. You know, the Torah doesn't speak very much about the Melech HaMashiach. You know, but anyhow, yes. What? That's very good. That's a very good point. Excellent point. There will come a time. That's a phrase that Zechariah uses for Moshe. Bayom Ahu, we say it every day. Yi Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. Very good. Very good point. Very good point. All right. We'll stop here and we will continue. Oh, next week is Tanis Esther. Are people coming? If people are coming, I'll give a shir. Are you coming? Okay. Maybe we'll do something for Purim, but on Megillas Esther or something like that.